Hello and welcome to Global Business, and this week an encounter with a very experienced businessman who questions the way organizations work or don't work. This is terrifically important because so many of us all over the world work in organizations of some sort, and there's a nagging feeling that working life inside them could be far better than it actually turns out to be. Gerard Fatlow is one of the most successful business people in Britain. He trained as a biochemist, which we may talk about later, and then worked for a long time for one of the biggest oil companies in the world, the giant Shell Corporation. He ended up there as chief executive of Shell Chemicals UK, but in 1980 he left to start his own company in the then very pioneering field of biopharmaceuticals, Celltech. He ran that until 1990. Now he's sort of free to think about the organization world he's been part of for so long. So he's written a book about it, a slim volume called The Three Ways of Getting Things Done. And it's designed to challenge conventional thinking about the best way of building, shaping and running companies and organizations. And I'm here to find out more about it. First, Gerard, what are these three ways?
The three ways include hierarchy, which everyone knows about because it has bosses and underlings. The next one is less well known. It's called heterarchy, which means that power is spread around, that nobody is the boss or everybody is the boss. And the third way of getting things done is responsible autonomy. Well, autonomy is you get on with it by yourself. But responsible means you just don't do what you would like. You do something with a purpose, and you're responsible for achieving that thing.
Well, we better discuss those in order, and the familiar one first, because the other two are, on the whole, unfamiliar. So hierarchy, I have a boss, and he has a boss, and so on, and who do you report to is the main feature of how people define where they are in the organisation. That's the conventional form. You say that's hardwired into the way people think about companies, organisations, everything.
I think that we inherited some sort of predisposition to have an idea of who's boss, who's up, and who's down, who's a subordinate. Actually, if you look at animals, if you look at the way that, for instance, chickens have pecking orders, if you look at apes, they have alpha males that boss everyone around, and they get the females and they get the best part of life. So that this is something that the animal kingdom has always had, and humans, I believe, are no different.
It's a nasty thing because of what it does to us or what it does to the organisations who employ it?
I would say both. I think that it's corrosive to be in any part of a hierarchy. And, of course, why has it persisted? I believe that is partly genetic, and also because people honestly and sincerely believe it is the only way to get things done.
And yet when you see that garage that Hewlett and Packard started out in Silicon Valley, California, this great company formed in a garage, which you can still go and peep over the fence and look at, you realise that there was two people working a little business. They knew they were bright and clever. The phone rang, and the person who picked it up could reconfigure the whole company around maybe an order coming in or something like that. That never happens again in an organization. If you get two garages, you're beginning to go dysfunctional, aren't you?
Well, of course, there are advantages in small organizations. One of the advantages is that you don't need hierarchy, or at least you don't need so complicated a way of getting things done. That's why when small organizations grow, there is a great tendency to introduce hierarchy because it's seen as being the way of coping with that problem of something bigger. That coping with not being able to just shout across the garage and get things reorganized.
We've established so far that hierarchy may not be good for you or for the organisation you work for, and that it may make you unproductive or relatively unproductive in the organisation you work for. So first of all, it's not very nice. People are always complaining about their jobs. Secondly, they're not doing their jobs very well. So you started thinking like this, and you started feeling your way towards an alternative, two alternative ways of doing things.
And that was while I was working in Shell. I suppose I'd been there some 10 years or so when I started to realise that this wasn't the only way to make things work. But one of the experiences that was most important for me was when I became CEO of the bit of Shell called Shell Chemicals UK. That at that time had about 5,000 people in it, so it was quite big. And I started to realise that a lot of what the CEO was supposed to do was incredibly artificial, that everyone expected you to behave in a dictatorial way and to boss people around and to interfere with the way things were going. But actually, I realised that I wasn't in a position to do that. I didn't know a lot more than the other 4,999 people. I didn't know better than everyone there.
So you were likely to interfere in ways that were less knowledgeable and less experienced and less good.
Quite often that was so. Of course, there were some things that I had a good idea about, but much better was if I had the opportunity of talking to colleagues, people throughout the organisation, and sharing my information, my understanding, rather than giving orders as to how things should be done from my point of view.
But you were doing this within the context, the formal context of the existing Shell Chemicals organisation, or were you renaming everything and de-departmentalising?
This was a day-by-day thing. This was a way of working throughout the working week. Day in, day out. It wasn't something sort of artificial put on top. It's true that we didn't do a lot of renaming and redrawing of boxes and so on, because the idea of the boxes and the lines between them being important is a hierarchical idea, and that if you want to get away from hierarchy, you don't spend a lot of time drawing boxes and naming people and giving people titles and giving people formal authority. What you do is you talk a lot about what should be done, you agree what's going to be done, and then you get on and do it. And that how people are labelled or titled is much less important than agreeing on how to get things done.
But you've already said that hierarchy seems to be hardwired into the way people think and behave, so you're going against the grain when you do this, aren't you? Isn't there always a danger of people reverting to type, to hardwiring, to hierarchy, if the decisions are difficult ones, or if things go wrong and blame is involved, for example?
Oh yes, of course. This doesn't happen easily, and it certainly doesn't happen overnight. I can imagine it'll take a century for hierarchy to be extinguished.
Now, if one is trying to do this in an organisation, it needs some leader who is prepared to reconstruct what he finds, what she finds, in a different way. And the difficulty with this is, if you're up against hierarchy as the norm, the way everybody else works, the hard wiring, then as soon as the leader moves away or loses interest or is replaced, then you slip very quickly back to that norm, don't you? You're not going to change things. It's going to take longer than 100 years.
Now, I really want to be absolutely clear that if we got rid of hierarchy, we would not get rid of leadership. We should not get rid of leadership. But what we want is dispersed leadership throughout an organisation, that everyone is potentially a leader, are capable of leading on certain things that they know about, that they feel about, that they have a special skill that they can deploy in a particular area. So I think, and I've had a lot of experience in actually seeing this in action, that people do rise to the occasion. They do produce solutions to problems, they produce new ideas, and they persuade others to follow. And so I do not believe that leadership comes only from the top. It comes from everywhere, potentially, and it's hierarchy that stops it coming from everywhere.
This is Global Business from the BBC World Service. I'm Peter Day, this week hearing from the London businessman Gerard Fatlow about his view of organisations, as laid out in a new book called The Three Ways of Getting Things Done. One of the clever people at the Institute for the Future in Silicon Valley, California, once described the 21st century organisation to me, that is, as opposed to the pyramid of the old organisation, as being like a kind of net laid on the ground. And where a particular problem or opportunity created itself within the organisation, then you pick the net up and a point is formed above the base level of the net around which the organisation configures itself for a period of time, for the project, for the idea, for the opportunity. And then when that goes away or is dealt with, that goes down and you pick up the net at another point and the organisation recoheres in that network way around it. And I thought that was very vivid and maybe too powerful a metaphor for trying to apply to an organisation, because doing it is jolly difficult, isn't it?
Indeed, networking and heterarchy are in some ways similar. What I wouldn't agree with is necessarily this idea that the net is picked up. That implies somebody is up there above the net.
All right, rises itself.
Rises itself is honestly better, because that's what happens, that it's the energy and enthusiasm of the people throughout the network or the heterarchy that causes this thing to rise and attracts others around it.
But that vivid metaphor, that vivid image, does go against the way people normally feel within an organisation. I don't know what the optimum size of a department or whatever it is that you feel happy with actually is, but outside that, you get all defensive and you work really for your department rather than the organisation itself, don't you? And that gets in the way of that kind of flexibility, that I'm in purchasing, I'm in marketing, I'm in manufacturing. And those are the loyalties you have and the hierarchy or not, and the obligations you have too, and the way you feel good about the work you do, are contained within these much smaller containers within the great big corporation.
Yes, that's what's sometimes called the silo mentality. But I would say there are two things here. First of all, you can have responsible autonomy, that heterarchy is not the only alternative to hierarchy.
This is the third way of doing things.
So if something can genuinely be isolated off, whether it's a particular function like manufacturing or something like that, if that can genuinely be separated from the other functions of the organisation, then you can give it autonomy, give it its own responsibility, its own terms of reference, its own targets, and say, okay, you guys go off and damn well do it. And you have a responsibility to use your autonomy in a thoroughly good way and against certain predefined criteria for success. Now, then the other thing is, and this is getting a little bit complicated, but let's have a go at it, a heterarchy of heterarchies, that you can have a group of people who agree on something, and then some representative can go off and talk to another part of the organisation and say, okay, now let's work together on a certain thing, and then maybe several other people or other groups come in. So in other words, that you don't have to have 150 people all going to talk to the next group of 150 people across the way. You can have some kind of representative boundary spanner that goes from one to the other.
Let's think about the autonomy for a little while. I think out of almost anarchy, actually, came the PlayStation, which saved Sony's bacon for some recent years. And this was a project that they were probably almost specifically disbarred from working on. So it was a skunk works thing. It was done secretly and in private and got to such a stage when it was such a good idea, it had to burst forth in the organisation. That's autonomy for you.
It is, yes. And you may say that it's not preset autonomy. It's autonomy that the people concerned took.
But they're picking up the signals from the organisation that maybe in the past this was the kind of way we grew so well in Japan of the 1960s or something.
That's right. Japan of the 1960s really did encourage innovation in this autonomous way, that the terms of reference given to innovative groups were deliberately vague. They had a general idea of what they were encouraged to do and some general principles, but on the whole, they got on with it, and that created genuine innovation in a way that the more controlled North American and European corporations failed to do.
Now, all this conversation, you've talked about things from the point of view of the organisation itself and the people within it and their well-being and its well-being, but there are sort of various external measurements of this, share price and the risk you take with shareholders' money when you send out autonomous bodies to do new things. That's a risky business. Is it a kind of risk that ordinary conservative companies can actually take?
Well, I think that actually shareholders, or some of them, are prepared to listen when you have an innovative idea. And I don't only mean an innovative idea in relation to a product or a new process or anything, but including organisation. And I've had experience of that because that's exactly what I did in the biopharmaceutical company Celltech.
And of course, quite a lot of the doubts that people will have about your challenging of the hierarchy idea will probably be rather eroded by your success at Celltech, because here's one of the few biopharmaceutical companies that's actually worked and made money, isn't it?
It was a very successful company, initially under my leadership and then under the leadership of others.
And these principles applied to Celltech, did they, this heterarchy?
Formally, we had a hierarchy. I was the CEO, the boss. But the heterarchical approach we had from the beginning.
Of course, it was a scientific company built around scientific principles with an end that was going to be delivered via science, wasn't it? So, for example, people who came to work for you and people who backed you knew this was a long-term thing, not a quarter-by-quarter performing sort of company in the first place.
That's true, and of course it was easier to do it in a company like Celltech, where we had very highly educated people, and if we didn't treat them right, they'd be off to somebody else. All of those things, it's true, made it easier to do it in Celltech than, say, in Shell or in a government department or several other kinds of organisation. But we're not the only place in which heterarchical principles have worked pretty well, and also the principle of responsible autonomy. For instance, there has been an enormous growth in professional service firms like accountants and law firms and other professionally based firms. The basic structure of those firms is a heterarchy, at least at the partner level, that in the end the partners elect the managing partner, and the managing partner is often a rotating job. So there is not actually in those companies a traditional hierarchy. There is some hierarchy among the partners, and certainly between the partners and the more junior lawyers or accountants in the firm. So I'm not saying they're pure heterarchies, but they have got a lot of heterarchy, and they are very successful businesses.
Except that they now feel themselves very challenged by the freelance world, not the individuals who work project by project to have their brains stretched and get a lot of money on a six-month contract and then move on to the next one, but are not willing to commit themselves to the company car, the promise of a partnership, the pension fund, those kind of long-term prospects, who really relish the idea of doing a new difficult thing and then taking their skills off to another new difficult thing, completely disconnected from it. The professional services firms, they feel challenged by this new freelance world, don't they?
Yes, and of course that's, if you like, the extreme of heterarchy, that you don't have a permanent organisation at all. That's not to say that you don't have an organisation, because a freelancer working for or with a larger group of people, other freelancers, or with a big corporation, or with a pattern of different organizations cooperating in strategic alliances and so on. There are rules there, and there are clear relationships, sometimes laid down by legal contract, some by custom and practice, and by mutual trust. So it's not exactly that there is no organization, but there is no permanent organization in that freelance thing. And that is very similar to what you were talking about in the network organization, where something picks itself up, gets organized, and then disperses, and the people concerned reconfigure in a different way.
What you're talking about in a much more worked out and thought out way is this kind of despairing thought I have from time to time. What energy would be released in organizations if you could only find some way of aligning the purposes of the individuals who work for them with the purposes of the corporation itself?
That is the real secret of organization, that people enjoy their work, they love contributing to it, they believe in the aims of the organization, and that they enjoy working with other people because of this common aim.
And they're pretty close to some sort of delivery point too in it. So you're not middle management, actually.
That's right. Maybe we said earlier on that perhaps the people who suffer most in the hierarchy are the ones in the middle. And maybe that suffering is a lot of what causes unhappiness in organizations. But of course, what we've just been saying about dedication, commitment, and aligning the individual and the organization is a utopian thing. We will probably never get anywhere absolutely near that. But what I'm saying is we can get a lot nearer to it than we presently are. And that's why I believe that these ideas of heterarchy and responsible autonomy ought to be brought into organizations much more. Of course, I can't predict everything that will happen as these ways of getting things done spread. Because obviously, if you're in a pioneering thing, which at the moment these things tend to be, there is the excitement of being a pioneer, which does actually make life more interesting, and it attracts people with open minds and so on. And when it becomes more widespread, maybe it will be less exciting, more humdrum. That's possible. But I still believe that the removal of an obtrusive, egocentric, tyrannical sometimes hierarchies will be a very good thing.
Many thanks, Gerard Fatlow. His book is The Three Ways of Getting Things Done. It's published in Britain by Triarchy Press. They are mystifying things, organisations. At least I think so. But then, of course, I work for the BBC.